Okay, we're on page 942. Okay, we're going to start again, Pasuk Yud Zayin, because we left off in the middle. Okay? Moshe Rabbeinu is saying that you came to me and you said, you know, it's too much work, we need other people to help you, we need other types of judges, you know, because Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't do it. So Moshe Rabbeinu appointed officers of thousands, hundreds, 50, tens, and the Shoitrim. What were the Shoitrim? Shoitrim were ones that enforced the law. Shefet judged the law. Shoter was the one that enforced the law. Okay, so then he says, I'm telling you to listen to the cases between a person and his friend, or Ben Gera, and between the Baal Din, or between two brothers inheriting, like we learned last time. Okay. Then it says like this, Pasuk Yud Zayin, 17. They say, Kiru Panim Bamishpat, you cannot show favoritism in the judgment. Everybody has to be treated equally. And Rashi says two things. One explanation of this is that this is a commandment that when you appoint judges, you shouldn't appoint the judge just because he's your friend, even though he's not fit to be a judge. Simply, the halacha is, Le'isakiru panim b'mishpat, is referring to the judge himself. Don't, you know, this guy's rich, you have to give him to make him right, or he's poor, you have to make him right, or whatever, a powerful guy, you can't do that.
What? The judge says, I don't want to judge.
Judge has a right to say that. We're going to get into all this in the next two psukim. We're going to discuss a lot of laws. So it says, but here Rashi says it also applies that people appointing the judges have to make sure the judge is a proper judge and not to appoint them just because he's your political friend that voted for you. Kakotun kagodl dishmon, you have to listen to small cases just like you would big cases. The din of a pruta, whether it's a penny, should be as important to you as a $1 million case. And the Gemara says over here two things, the Gemara in Sanhedrin that we learned. Says, number one, not only should you treat it the same, but you can't give precedence. You can't say, okay, this case is a $1 million case, let me take it before the dollar case. If the dollar case came first, that case has to be judged first. Le'isagurim ibnei ish, you're not allowed to be afraid of anybody. And here there's two interpretations. Simply, le'isagurim ibnei ish means you should not be afraid of anybody, refers to a judge. He shouldn't be afraid to make a ruling, you know, because the guy's not going to like it. He's going to be afraid of a powerful guy that might come out with a campaign against him. So, like, the halacha is, before you judge the case, you have a right to say, I don't want to sit. Once you take the case, thank you. Once you hear the case and you know where it's going, you have to make a ruling, even though you're going to be afraid of a guy. The Torah says, don't be afraid of him. That's one interpretation. Another interpretation, they say, Gurum Mina'ish, is, Rashi says also from the Gemara, this is all from the Gemara in Sanhedrin that we're learning these days. They say, Gurum Mina'ish means, you're not allowed to, this goes to the judge and to the litigant, both. The judge cannot hear one side without the other side present. That's from the judge's perspective, it's forbidden. And a judge, the litigant, is not allowed to say his case in front of the judge before the other guy is there. So it's a negative commandment of both people. The judge cannot hear a case one side before the other one's there. And the litigant is not allowed to give his case, to tell his case, without the other litigant there. Yeah, sure.
But we can't
say if a judge hears one side the case, he's out of it. That's what some judges do, by the way. Some of the opponents don't want to sit on the case. A guy calls him up, they say, let me hear the case. He tells him the case, he says, okay. Then he says, can you be my judge? So no, I'm disqualified.
But you can't tell about the case, what the case is about.
You can't tell the details of the case. When you come to court, if I want to summons you to Bedin, I have to tell you what it's about, whether it's a business deal, this deal, that deal. I mean, it has to be something that Bedin knows what it's about. And another interesting thing in Bedin also, after everything is said and done, the whole thing, Bezdin has to say, the guy has to be able to tell Bezdin, so what are you asking for? You can't say, I'm asking for damages. You need to say, how much are you asking? You have to be explicit. the plaintiff needs to say exactly what he wants. He can't say, I'm asking for damages. You know, you can't say the Beis Din is going to tell him that's not a, that's, you have to say what you're asking exactly is a dollar amount.
What is the demarcation that we've said too much to the judge that he becomes
disqualified? Once he goes into details of the case.
I mean,
if you say to, okay, I have a general argument about a business deal, that's fine. But once you start saying the details of what happened and this and that, then it could disqualified.
Well, if you're going to say how much is I'm asking for, you can't say that.
If you don't go into any details, you say I'm asking for $1,000, but you can't tell them what, who, what, when, where. See, what?
Could a plaintiff in the middle of the court say, you know what, forget it?
Sure he could. If he drops the case, the defendant can't say middle, forget it.
Right.
The plaintiff, why not?
In the middle of the court?
If the Tavea gives up the case, says, you know what, forget it, I'm not interested anymore, forget the case, he doesn't get any rights then.
Right.
Sure he could drop the case, the judges love it. The Beis Din loves it. The guy said, forget the case. What, do they have to break their heads and figure out what the halach is? And you have to be careful what you're doing. Because the judgment is for Hashem. And what does this mean? Like this we discussed last week. What happens over here is the pasuk saying, Hashem says, if you obligate him $1,000 that he wasn't obligated to pay, you know what happens? Hashem said, okay, I'm going to have to figure out a way to get him back his money and to get that money away from the guy who got the money illegally. So Hashem says, you're giving me extra work. I have to change nature, not the worker. Hashem has to change things around now. Make sure this guy loses $1,000 somehow and this guy gets $1,000 somehow. So he says, when you be careful, you have to be careful how you extract money in the court case because you're playing with God's money. You know, God is going to have to start moving things around. Shifting accounts. And then he says like this, and this is not where we're up to, but now this part of the parts we didn't learn. And then Moshe Rabbeinu says to the Jews like this, anything which is too difficult from you, bring it to me, and I will hear it. Okay? So Rashi says, Rashi began one opinion in the Gemara. Rashi says, because of this statement, Moshe Rabbeinu was punished. He sounded haughty. He said, anything you guys don't understand, bring to me. So even though the fact was, who else would know it if not Moshe Rabbeinu? On Moshe Rabbeinu's level, it was considered haughtiness. And therefore, the Gemara says, that when Selofchad's daughters earlier came and said, you know, we have a problem, my father died, there was no son, we don't need daughters. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, I forgot the halacha, and therefore Moshe Rabbeinu had to ask Hashem. Why did he not know the halacha? That was the punishment, one opinion of the Gemara says, for what he bragged over here, that anything which is too difficult from you, you come to me.
So what should he have said?
1 minute. So other opinion, the Gemara said, that's not what Moshe Rabbeinu said. If he said a different wording of the Gemara, he brings down over here. 1 second. Here. Okay. So they said, see, the other opinion, the Gemara, says that Moshe Rabbeinu was not punished. It was not haughtiness. Because what Moshe Rabbeinu said was, if you don't know it, bring it to me, and I'll ask Hashem what the halacha is. It's not that he made it away, I know everything, and if you don't know, bring it to me, I know everything. That's one opinion. The other opinion, Gemara said, that's not what Moshe Rabbeinu said. Then he would have said, Vashmi'eichem, or Va'alamdechem. So the wording of the pasuk, the way the pasuk is wording, the Gemara says, "Takrivun elai, bring it to me, ushmaitiv, and I'll hear from Hashem what I should do." So it's not haughty. So then, why did Moshe Rabbeinu forget the story with the Selofchad's daughters? So the Gemara says they merited that parsha should be done through them, And I was really, Moshe Rabbeinu should have known the halacha, and he would have known it and everything. But they had such a schus that they merited that God spoke a halacha just for them. But it wasn't, God forbid, because Moshe Rabbeinu was haughty or anything like that.
According to the first opinion, so why did they say Moshe is unknown and pull that out? What did they say to that?
There was nothing wrong with what Moshe Rabbeinu said, except
no,
on his level. I'm saying, even according to the first opinion that says Moshe Rabbeinu was haughty, and because of that he was punished, it was only on Moshe Rabbeinu's level. Let me ask you a question. Okay, in yeshiva, yeah? Sometimes the teacher teaches the children, in base medrash, like, right? Then the kids learn themselves, chavruta, right? They learn the prayers. And then you have the rabbi sitting, the teacher sitting there. And what did he tell the kids? If you don't understand anything in the Gemara, come ask me. That's Gaiva.
No.
I mean, the reality, the teacher, the professor tells the students, study on your own. If you don't know something, come and ask me. What a parent tells the kid also, try to do your homework. If you don't understand, come, I'll explain it to you. At Moshe Rabbeinu's level, that was haughtiness. But otherwise, even in the simple sense, the Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, listen, Hadava she'ikshem mikem, he tells the judges, okay, you guys are going to do, if you don't know anything, come to me. I mean, that's the reality. Moshe Rabbeinu knew it. But on Moshe Rabbeinu's level, the Torah, the Gemara says he was punished.
Rabbeinu, but all the people went to Moshe Rabbeinu.
Yeah, but afterwards, Yisri told them, you need to start making, it's too much for you. It's too much work for you. So he said to appoint the lesser judges. So he made the heads of the thousands and that. Okay, then the pasuk says like this. Vatzava ezcha meisahi, and then I will command you, eis kol advarim asher tasin, all the things that you should do. Now, Rashi says there, one statement, Rashi says, this refers to the 10 things which are between capital punishment cases and monetary cases. Because in Beis Din you have capital punishment, like we learned in the Gemara this week, right? Capital punishment needs 23. A regular Beis Din for monetary things is 3. Okay? But Rashi just says there's 10 differences. So then Mefarshim, the Chum and Mamlezi brings down. Okay? So there's 10 differences. It's very interesting differences between monetary cases and capital punishment cases, when the mis is involved. One is, like we said, one is 3 and one is 23. The different one is, in capital punishment, you start with the merits instead of the negative. In other words, when it comes to capital punishment, you say to the person, don't worry, if you didn't kill him, you have nothing to be afraid of. And, or they first say, whoever has a merit for the person should come and say it. So they start always with the merit. Because by that capital punishment, the Torah uses the expression, v'hitzilu ha'eda, they should try to find favor. Next difference is, another interesting difference, in monetary issues, a majority of one is enough. If you have a Beis Din of 3, right, in money, 2 say guilty, 1 say innocent, he's guilty. In capital punishment, for negative, not for schus, you need at least a majority of 2. So let's say you have a Beis Din of 23 for capital punishment, right? 12 say innocent, and 11 say guilty, he's innocent. No, because it's for good. If 12 say innocent, and 11 say guilty, the guy's innocent. What happens if 12 say guilty and 11 say innocent? He's not guilty. It has to be a majority at least of 2. So practically speaking, in a Beis Din of 23, you need 13 to say guilty and 10 to say innocent, and then you kill him. But if it's 12 and 11, he doesn't get killed. In monetary laws, a majority of 1 is enough.
What about 13 and 11?
The Beis Din's only 23. How do you get 13 and 11? You can't have an odd number in a Beis Din, ever. It's not like in the secular courts you can have a Supreme Court to be divided or whatever.
But for one attorney, we can have two.
Only if both accept it. Okay, the next difference is another difference. What happens if Beis Din realized after the decision that they made a mistake? So they cancel the verdict and they start over again. In capital punishment, it works like this. If they ruled innocent and they realize they made a mistake, he stays innocent. If they ruled guilty for death and they realize they make a mistake, they start all over again. Next is by monetary issues, if you have the Beis Din and the disciples, students are sitting in front of them, they could say to the judges, the student could say to the Rebbe, we have a different opinion whether good or bad. In capital punishment, they can only say a different opinion in good, not in bad. Okay? In capital punishment, in monetary things, it works like this. If a judge ruled guilty, and then somebody says, I have a reason to make him innocent, we can make him innocent, the opposite is true. By capital punishment, once the judge rules innocent, he stays innocent. Guilty, you can undo it. But monetary judgments, we're almost done. Seventh difference between monetary laws and capital punishment. In monetary laws, you can sit by day, by night, you can make a ruling by night, you can make a ruling by day, it doesn't matter. Capital punishment, it has to be during the day. So they have to hear the case during the day, and they have to make a ruling during the day. And it's interesting, in capital punishment, it says in Halach, you have to sleep over it. You have to sleep on it. Why? Because maybe overnight, you'll find the merit for the person. So that you see, for good. And then the ninth one is, there's another interesting din. In monetary laws, who says the opinion, when they're negotiating the Beis Din, sitting and talking, who speaks first? The greatest of the three. In capital punishment, they start from the lowest. Why? Interesting reason why. Let's say a Beis Din of 23, right? They give capital punishment. So you start, when they're discussing, you have to take a vote. What do you say, right? So you start with the smallest of them, meaning the least great of them all. Why? Very simple thing. If you start from the greatest, and he says his opinion, he's going to influence everybody else's opinion. The younger judges, younger I don't only mean in years, I mean in knowledge, right? Are going to say, wow, he's smarter, he's greater, he's more experienced. If he says this way, then maybe I should be saying it like him too. And the Torah said, then it's not your opinion. We need to hear what your opinion is. See, if it begins from the youngest going to the oldest is not going to care what the youngest says. I mean, he's smart, he's great, he's going to have his opinion. He doesn't care what the other, he's not going to be persuaded by the youngest. But the youngest will be persuaded by the oldest. So therefore, when it comes to capital punishment, you start from the youngest.
Why not for the money?
Because money, we don't care. And out of respect to the oldest, you go first. No, in money, it's not going to be that much of a difference. And also, in monetary cases, everybody, as long as their mother's a Jew, or, you know, he can sit. But in the fashas, it has to be Choshev, people that can marry a Kohen Levi in Yisrael. So for capital punishment, and by the way, this is what the Pasuk says. V'atzava eschem v'eisahi, at that time I command you to eis kol advar v'shem tasun. So it says in the Medrash, what did Hashem tell him? Hashem told him all the 10 differences between capital punishment and regular punishment, and what they need to do, and so on and so forth. Okay. Then the pasuk continues. So basically, that's the union of the litigations. Okay. Then the pasuk says like this. Pasuk Yutes. Vanisa Mechayrev. So we left from Har Seir, from Har Sinai. And as the Medr says, the Jews ran away like a little kid from school. They like ran away from Har Sinai. They were afraid, you know, maybe they're going to keep telling us more, give us more homework. Kids run away from school the second the bell rings, get out, the teacher might give, wake up. They ran away from Har Chayrev. And we traveled this whole complicated desert that you traveled. Through the heart of Amiri, through the nations of Amiri, that Hashem commanded us. We came to Kodesh Barnea. Now, the Mefarshim explain, what does it mean, Midbar HaGodol V'Neira? What do you mean, the fearful big desert? Because the Jews saw snakes and scorpions, and even though they weren't endangered, because the clouds protected them, and Ani HaKovid, nevertheless, they saw the carcasses. They saw how big the danger was that Hashem saved them from. This is again Moshe Rabbeinu telling him all the chesed that Hashem, all the kindness that Hashem actually did to them. And we came to Kodesh Barnea. Okay, so Vayomer Aleichem, and I said to them, Bosim at Haru Amiri, you came to Haru Amiri. That God is giving us the land of Sichon and Og. He said, look what Hashem is doing to you. And this is, by the way, before the spies. This is before the spies, because soon the pasuk of the spies is coming up. Meshe Ben says to you, see, Hashem is already giving you the land. Go up and conquer it. God spoke to you. Altira, don't be afraid. Valtechas, and don't be lose resolve. And also just don't get cooled down by what you saw. Just go. Hashem's giving it to you. Go.
Why do they have to fight for the land and say Yorash, you are gonna inherit it? It seems to be the speed of the fight. You just go there. And why the fighting?
Because the land of Canaan represents the battle with the Yetzirah. What is Hashem's gonna say? Just go to the Yetzirah. It's gonna be finished. You have to make the vessel in the fight. The Jews needed to know that Hashem is fighting for them, but they had to make the keli to go fight.
But at the end, they didn't really fight, right?
At the end, they fought, but it wasn't. I mean, Yericho fell down by itself, the walls, and I mean, they conquered. Most of the nations just ran away. But it took them still 7 years to do it. Not to conquer took 7 years. To conquer the entire land of Eretz Yisrael.
You didn't finish, no?
Huh?
You sure didn't finish, no?
You sure finished in 7 years.
But you don't stop at one time or start again, no?
No.
It was 7 years.
7 years straight and then 7 years to divide the land. He spoke Shabbos by Bikur. Yeah, 7 years to conquer, 7 years. But it represents the seven Midas and the seven Aveh. You know, it's a whole, in Ruchnius, in the spiritual world, there's a lot about the conquering of the seven Midas, the seven nations.
Everything is a keli?
Everything. The person has to fight with a keli.
There is no matana coming?
No.
No matana.
Matana is what's called in the Zohar Nama Duchsufa, shamed bread. Something you get for free is called shamed bread because you don't appreciate it. Huh? Yeah, because you don't have something you get for free that comes easy, is easy come, easy go. It's really, in fact, they saw it with the previous Rebbe came to America, he started printing, you know, things, sikhs and different things. And he had sponsors for them. But he said they should charge a nickel. In those days, a nickel was also not like it is today, a nickel, but it was a minimal amount. And he said, because if people buy something, then they appreciate it much better than if you just hand it out for free. That's the nature of people.
In Ruchnius also.
In Ruchnius also. Something that comes easy,
Easy come, easy go.
Nama, the Gemara says, Nama apum charba lechel. Nama is bread. Apum charba, with the sword, lechel you eat. What does it mean? The Gemara says simply, to make a living, you gotta fight. He says, everybody's in business, so it's not easy. You go out there and the money comes. That's what the younger generation wants. Second, they walk in the store, they want the money flowing all over the place. It doesn't work like that.
Is it Yerusha like Matana?
Yerusha has an advantage over Matana. Matana has an advantage over... Everything has its advantage. But that's why it's... But here the Torah is saying you need to conquer the land. But the attitude has to be, like we spoke many times, that when you go to battle, the attitude has to be that I'm going to win. The attitude, the victory march, that you go before you even fight, you already won. The attitude is that you will be won. When you win, then it works. Okay, then now the Torah starts telling Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu is telling the Jews off. You all approached me. Okay? And Rashi says, Birvuvia. It was disorderly, disrespectful. The younger pushing the old and the old pushing the young. It was like a balagan. There was no respect. Okay? When the, like Rashi says, in later on in Dvarim, Perakei Pasikhov, over there it says they came respectfully, I'll tell you in a second. Over there they came respectfully, here. When they came to Moshe Rabbeinu after, they came to him, after it says, then you came to me respectfully, first the elders came, and then the rest of the people came, here, Kulchem, it was a balagan, you know, the Yiddish balagan, everybody started just coming, younger, older, no respect, no nothing. What did you say? The Taimran, you said, Nishlucha Anoshim Lefaneinu, let us send spies before us, V'yachperu Lonu Esa'oretz, and they should spy out the land, V'yashivu Aysanu Davar, and they should return a word to us, Esa'derach Shinalaba, the way to go up, V'Esa'orim, and the cities of Shinovi Alim. By the way, before we go further, if you look in Targum, if you look in Unklus on Pasuk Chabez, V'yachperu Lonu is when you should spy out the land, yeah? What does the Targum call it? V'ya'alulun, which is Elul. So the Mefarshim will talk about the month of Elul. One of the things they tell, they say the meaning of the month of Elul is to V'yachperu Lonu, to spy out. And the word spying, Targum Unkel says, what does it mean? V'yalulunin, Elul. That means Elul is to check out. What does a spy do? A spy doesn't only see the open things. For a spy to see the open things are noticeable. You don't need to send spies. When the Russians send spies and Americans and the Israelis, everybody sends spies, yeah? The open things everybody sees. What's the purpose of... It's okay, it's a nice tune at least. I've heard worst ones. Now, what's the meaning of spying? Spying is to get into the hidden secrets that are not visible. Right? That's the whole meaning of spying. So what is Elul? What's the Avod of Elul? This is the Chag about Elul, but they say, what is the Avod of Elul? To spy out our Yetzer and Nefesh HaLikis. To go into the hidden details, the ones that I normally covered up, that you don't see, or we fool ourselves with, to, you know, to dig deep. By the way, v'yachperu chofer is also to dig. Right? It's spying, because why is spying called v'yachperu? Why is the spying called v'yachperu? Yachperu in Hebrew is digging. Because a spy digs deeper to find the hidden stuff that's going on, right? That's the whole union of a spy, to get the military secrecy and all that. So the Avod of Elul, it says in Sfarim, is v'yachperu lonu, to dig deeply into ourselves, to get to the real core of where we're really at, what's good, what's bad, what needs to be fixed, what doesn't need to be fixed, what needs to be improving, and so on. Okay, that's that, because it has to do with Elul. So you said, let's send people, v'yachperu lonu, so let them spy out the land. V'yashivu yisanu David, they should come back with a word for us. Okay? The road we should go up. And the road, how we should go conquer the land. So he says, Vayitav be'enai adavod. Meshabina says, it was good in my eyes, but not in Hashem's eyes. That's what he did see. Vayitav be'enai adavod. It was only good. So Rashi asks, if Meshe Rabbeinu said it was good, so why is he admonishing the people? They come to Meshe Rabbeinu and they say, let us send spies. Yeah? So what does Meshe Rabbeinu tell them? For me it was good. I agreed with you, but Hashem didn't. So why is Meshe Rabbeinu yelling at them if he said himself it was good? Right? It doesn't make sense. So Rashi brings down, a guy sells to his friend, sell me your donkey. He says, yeah. Give it to me for a test drive. Yes. Let me go in the mountains and the valleys. Yes. He says, you know, when the seller is offering to whatever the buyer is asking, can I take a test drive here, there? And the seller says, yeah. So the buyer says, well, I don't need to take it for a test drive already. If he's offering me, then obviously he knows that there's not going to be anything wrong with the car. Right? So he said, yeah. That's what Meshe Rabbeinu said. Okay? I agreed to you. Meshe Rabbeinu said, you know why I agreed to you? Because I thought if I would agree to you, then you're not going to do it. I once had a story with somebody. Sometimes Hashem plants a little bit of, when you need it, Hashem, in infinite kindness, gives a little. There was a teenager that wanted to go to a mixed camp. And the parents didn't want him to go. They were frumpy. They didn't want him to go. And the more he said no, the more he said yes. No. So he came to what to do. So he said to them, you know what? Next time he says he wants to go, tell him no problem. Sure, you can go. No problem. And the second they said that, all of a sudden he didn't want to go anymore. That's what Meshe Rabbeinu thought it was going to work here with the Yidden. It didn't work.
How did that work? Tell us the secret.
The Jews are coming to Meshe Rabbeinu and saying, no, because that was the kid, just because the father said no, he said no. I mean, yes, he said no, and oh yes. I mean, that was...
He was a teenager.
Whoever's teenagers know what it is. 13, 14, 15. It gets worse, by the way. When they get 20, it starts getting better. But that's what Meshe Rabbeinu... So Meshe Rabbeinu is telling a Musar, it doesn't mean that I thought it was a good idea. Meshe Rabbeinu says, I'm telling you guys it was a good idea because then I thought you'd back off. If I'm telling you, you want to send spies, no problem. You can spend spies. You'll see, right? Instead of Jews saying, okay, then we don't need to, like the buyer would say, the Jews said anyway. So Meshe Rabbeinu was upset with them. So what happened? It was good in my eyes, but not in Hashem's eyes. And I took from you 12 people, Ishachadashav, one man per tribe, like the 12 spies. They turned, and here you have also the concept, Vayifnu means also they turned away from Hashem, like they turned. They went up to the mountain, they came to Nachal Eshkol, and they spied it. By the way, there's different levels of spying. There's meraglim, there's v'yachpiru lanu. There's different types of spying. Meraglim comes the word regel. Those are spies that go by foot. And then there's other things, you know, what you see, what you don't see, you know, the digging and the regular things that you see, you know, what type of cities they were. So that's why the term, by the way, changes the various different expressions of a spy. Because some expressions of a spy means to go by foot, and then you see openly what's there. The yachperu is a deeper level of spying when you go into you dig deep into the hidden stuff. Okay, the yichu biyodim mepiri aretz, and they took with their hands from the fruit of the land. The yiridu elena, they brought it down to us. The yeshivo eson on us on the dove of a yemru. And they came back and they said, Teva Haaretz, The land is good. Asher Hashem Elokeinu Neisin Lanu. That God is giving us. So who is the one? So Rashi, there was only two. Yeshua and Kalev were the only ones that said good. But V'lei Avisim Lales, that refers to everybody else. Okay? Now again, in brief, the whole issue with the spies is not Chas Shalom, the Jews were bad, because the Meraglim were Tzadikim. Moshe Rabbeinu handpicked them. They were very great people. What was the problem with the Meraglim? They didn't want to go into Eretz Yisrael. They wanted to stay in the desert, because in the desert they had free food, free clothing, free shelter. They were able to sit and study Torah all day. And the Dafka didn't want to go into Eretz Yisrael, because then the month stopped, everything stopped. They would have to work for a living, and they wouldn't be able to have time for us to do it.
So what if also with us today, but we don't go into Eretz Yisrael? Better to stay here or any country.
Today, you mean?
Yeah, but it's also between us and between America, but it's more comfortable to be here but to go there. So, what's the difference?
The question was, so why are we any different? We live here, we also don't go to Eretz Yisrael.
We live because it's more comfortable here.
No, well, it depends who. If some people live because it's more comfortable here. Okay? But that's a whole different story, this and today. Okay, or any times. Here Hashem said to the Jewish nation, go into Eretz Yisrael. Okay? They said no. Okay, so they're going against the direct commandment of Hashem. And what was worse, that they said, Mi bilti yecheles Hashem. Okay? Mi bilti, not here, but in the other, in Parshas Shlach. Mi bilti yecheles Hashem, that Hashem himself doesn't have the ability to conquer the land. That was their sin. Now, you should know when Ezra went to build up the second Beis HaMikdash, we learned a lot of Jews didn't want to go with him. Even a lot of Levim didn't go back up to the Beis HaMikdash. And Ezra fined them. He gave them a knas that they don't get Meiser anymore. And Meiser went straight to the Koyanim. Even though Meiser normally went to the Levim. So then again was the inyan of going back up. Whether the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvah, one of the Tayag mitzvahs is the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. In fact, there's a whole Gemara in Ksuvis that says, what happens if a husband wants to go to Eretz Yisrael and the wife doesn't want, she loses the Ksuba and he can force it, you can force this and force that. There's a lot of things the Gemara discusses. The Me'iri, interestingly, in the Gemara in Ksuvis writes that all the things the Gemara says about Eretz Yisrael applied in those days to Bavel. Because Bavel was also Mekim. It's a big Chiddush of the Me'iri, who was a Rishon, right, that the same thing applied in Bavel. Whoever left Bavel, the Gemara says, whoever doesn't live in Eretz Yisrael has like, Ein lo chelek b'laka Yisrael. I mean, very sharp expressions. The Gemara at the end of Ksubis, a few pages, very interesting about the whole inyan of moving to Eretz Yisrael. Whether that whole concept applies today or not, is a big machlekes in Poskim. It's a big argument in Halacha, if the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael applies today. Many Poskim hold it does, many Poskim hold it doesn't. That's issue number one. Okay? So today, in fact, we mentioned many times, when Rabbi Gorin, Shlomo Gorin was Rav HaRoshi of Eretz Yisrael, for those who remember, it was a long time ago, right? Rabbi Gorin? No?
Rav HaRoshi is the army.
Yeah, and then he became Rav HaRoshi Laretz. He was Rav HaRoshi. He came to the Rebbe, and he asked the Rebbe, do you hold of Aliyah? And the Rebbe said, I hold the mitzvahs of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So he again said, do you hold of Aliyah? The Rebbe said, I hold the mitzvahs of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And after a while, the Rebbe didn't change, he didn't change, so he stopped the conversation. But there's another thing. There's a pasuk that says...
What's the difference?
There's a big difference. Well, Aliyah is today going to Eretz Yisrael.
Huh?
Aliyah is not a mitzvah. There's a mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The Shal, that's I'm saying, if it applies, Mechus Allah's hold, it doesn't apply. A lot of Paschal hold, it doesn't apply today. But that's issue number one. Issue number two, there's a pasuk that says, I don't remember what the pasuk is, I know Chassidus brings it down, it's my mother, I'm the pasuk. Tzidkas Pizrei Nebi Yisrael. Okay? Amar Abay Ishiyam. My dechsiv, what does the pasuk say? Tzidkas Pizrei Nebi Yisrael. So like this. Tzedakah Asa Kodesh Baruch Hu Li Yisrael Shepizran bein ha'umis. Hashem did a favor to the Jewish people by spreading them out amongst all the nations of the world. This is what the Gemara says. Amar Abeshia, Tzedaka asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael. Okay, it's not here. Shepizran bein ha'umis, that he divided, spread them out amongst the nations. The simple meaning of the Gemara is, very simple. If, God forbid, all the Jews would be in Germany, and under Hitler, many, many, many more Jews would be killed. If many Jews were dying of the Inquisition, God forbid, many more Jews would be killed. Like this, there were Jews all over the world, so Jews had a place to go, and there were less Jews killed because of that. That's the simple meaning of the Gemara. Tzedakah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, Shepizran, that he spread them out amongst the nations of the earth. According to Chassidus and Kabbalah, the meaning of that is a much deeper meaning. There are sparks of Kedusha, of godliness, that are all over the world. All over the world. When Jews live in Australia, in South Africa, in Argentina, in America, in Europe, in wherever it is. So when a Jew does a mitzvah, or a Jew does business, and they utilize the money for Kedusha, to live like a Yid. So they're elevating the sparks of Kedusha in that country. So if all the Jews would, say, let's say, be, for argument's sake, in Eretz Yisrael, all the Jews would be there, all the sparks of Kedusha from America and South America and Africa and South Africa and Asia and Thailand wouldn't be elevated. Okay? So therefore, he says, what was the chesed, the tzedakah that Hashem did with the Jews all over the world? By spreading them out all over the world. By spreading them out all over the world, they had the ability to elevate Kedusha all over the world. The Rambam says, the Torah says, you're not allowed to go back to Egypt. You're not allowed to go back to Egypt. Why? What's this? So Chassidus explains, why not? Because when the Jews left Egypt, they took all the sparks of Kedusha with them. So there's no sparks left to Kedusha. Eight of Rava, out of 288, they took 202 sparks of Kedusha from the entire world. So there's no sparks of Kedusha left. So what's the purpose of a Jew there? The purpose of a Jew, wherever Hashem put him, is to elevate that part of the world that Hashem put him in. So if there's no sparks left, that's why the halacha is, for business, you can go back. Because business, now new sparks came there from different places. My goods came from different places to Egypt, so therefore you have, the sparks to go back.
Not to visit.
Huh?
Business here, not to visit.
No, if you have to live there for business, you could.
For sure, you don't want to go there now.
Not now. For a lot of reasons. Yeah, you can't stay out at night. That's the only reason why not. So therefore, the Jews are all over the world, and therefore their sparks of Kedusha need to be elevated from all over the world. Now, tzaddikim, this is what it says in Ayim Yim and in other places. Tzaddikim know where their place is, so they lechatchila go to their place where their destiny is, where they need to work. Us simple Jews. So the pasuk says, "May Hashem mitzadi gever kinonu until him." From Hashem, the footsteps of man are planned. Hashem gets us by hook or by crook in the place of the world that's ours to elevate. In other words, every person that's in this room who lives in California and in LA, Beverly Hills area, the place of our elevation of the world is in this particular place. Now, how does Hashem get us to here if this is our place where we need to work spiritually? So how does Hashem get us here? So Hashem either gets us married here, or because our in-laws are here, we're not here. I mean, whatever way you want to look at it, or our business is here, or our job, whatever it is. In other words, Hashem gets us here by hook or by crook. So we think we came here to California free will. It's not true. Why are we in California? Because this is the place where we need to work, and in California itself, all the place. So how does Hashem get us here? He gets you a job here, he gets you a shidduch here, he gets in school here, he gets whatever it may be. That's where Hashem gets us, and because that's where the place we need to be elevated.
So
Now, so therefore, in Golus, okay, before Kapsenu Yachad Me'aber Kamfes Hortz Larzenu, before the time of Mashiach, so whatever reason, God knows, there are Jews that are supposed to be all over the world. That's the whole concept of Golus. Okay? It says, there's another very strange Gemara. It says, the reason of Golus is Lahar B'Salem Gedim, that the Jews should make more converts. Now obviously that's not the Jewish thing to do, to make converts. We're against it. So Kabbalah and Chassidus explain, Gedim doesn't mean converts. It means the sparks of Kedusha that you need to get out from the places that are Gedim. They're temporary living there, and the Jew needs to take it out. So during the time of Golus, because we're not back in Eretz all together, so the fact that I'm here is because my mission is here, you're here, your mission is here, you're here, your mission is here. They're in a different state because their mission is in a different state. Now, therefore, right now, again, I'm not playing God. Does God want every single Jew of the world today to go to Israel? Probably not, because then we would have the Beis Hamikdash, and it's not ready yet. So Hashem says, now I need you here to do what you need to do here. It's not finished yet.
The goal is
to go back. I'm going to take this off speakerphone. Because the truth is, the Jews, wherever they are, because they didn't know this. But why taka do they live here? Because this is the place where they need to elevate, where they need to do mitzvahs. That's the why reason why I shouldn't put them here. Otherwise, taka, why are you here? Because this is the place Hashem made that we should live, because this is the place we need to deal with.
So why did Mataki
go? Huh?
Why did Mataki?
Because when eventually everybody goes back to Eretz Yisrael, that means all the sparks from all around the world was elevated, and there's no need anymore to be anywhere else.
But Mataki go is right now. But right now we have a job to do to elevate all the sparks.
But Yisrael is in tshuva, a Jew could do tshuva, all the Jews could do tshuva in 1 second, and everything is elevated. In 1 second, everything could be, all the sparks of Kedusha could be elevated. And that's what we're davening with. I said to them, I daven three, not all these guys daven every day, or three times a day. I said, I daven every day, Amachsa Shechinosa Letzion, that Hashem should take us back to Shlaim, Yechob Erachim Toshim. You guys don't even pray it three times a day. So, I'm a bigger Zionist than you guys. I told.
Must have been very young, Rabbi.
It was 25 years ago. No, I said, I'm a bigger Zionist than you. Because what are you doing? Okay.